This meeting is now being recorded.
Dear friends, we are fortunate that we have got the man body. Man body is the highest rung in all creation. And in man body only, we can know God. The God to whom we want to approach is already in this man body. Man body is considered to be the true temple of God. God resides in every heart. And we also reside in the same temple. We both of us, our own self and God, reside in this very man body, which is the true temple of God. But pity it is that we cannot speak with God. To see God or to find God or to converse with God, we have to just enter this laboratory of the man body. And this a wonderful house we live in. Macrocosm is in the microcosm of the man body. We have great possibilities awaiting us in this man body, and that is what, when we know ourselves, we know God too, and we just can traverse into the different planes of the macrocosm and reach the true home of our Father. These are the possibilities that are awaiting us, but unfortunately, we never had paid any attention to our own self. Man in three aspects. It has the physical body, it has intellect, and it is spirit in man now. A drop of the ocean of all consciousness, a conscious entity. We have given food to the body, and we have become physically strong. So we have also given food to the intellect. And we have become intellectually strong. We have made wonderful inventions which are before us. But all the same, what food we have given to our own self, until we give food to our own selves, which is conscious entity, we have no spiritual health. On the spiritual health depends the health of the mind and body both. So we have to consider what is that bread of life by giving which we can become spiritually strong. As I told you, we are given the food of reading and writing and just drawing inferences at the intellectual level, thinking so many ways that has given us intellectual health. We can think out in so very better ways. We are given food to the solid food to the solid body, physical body, and we are physically strong. So until we come to know what is the true bed of life or the water of life, which if given to the soul, we can become spiritually strong. For this you will refer to the scriptures that are with us today. We have got references to these things, but we have simply ruminated over them, never gone into them to understand what is what. I'll give you some instances from the different scriptures. Christ went to a well to have a drop of water. He met the other Samaritan lady who was carrying pitcher full of water over her head, and he asked her to give water. On account of inferiority complex, he said, "Well, we are Samaritans. You people have no connection with us. Why are you asking for water from us?" The Christ said, had she known who it was who had asked for water, she would have given you. This water which she carries, if you drink, that quenches the thirst for a while. Again man thirsts, again and again. Had she come to me, I would have given him what? The water of life. So there is some water of life which can be given by Christ-like people alone. In the religions we are guided, you see, we have our scriptures there, they refer to these things. We have simply considered out the very elementary steps and the preparatory steps to how to have certain form, certain badges of a certain religion, or how to say prayers, or how to perform certain rites and rituals, and that ends there. But we have to read the scriptures, and we should try to understand the scriptures, what they say. Scriptures are what? They are fine records of the experiences that the masters had in their life with God and in doing themselves. So, what they said, they saw, they experienced and they said. So, if you now want to understand the true import of the teachings, what they said, or what reference they made in their scriptures, we must know, must come by it at the feet of somebody who had that experience, that way of living. Similarly, you find we simply interpret these things at the level of the intellect and That is why we are not able to do full justice to the work. Again, you find in the scriptures, in other scriptures too, you find the same thing. In the Vedas, in the Bhagavad Gita literature, it is called the water which gives life, Abhayava. Of course, it's in some different language. In the Vedas, you find it as a sawgrass. Such a life which gives, such a water which gives life to everything. And what it is, the Master's other scriptures now, they tell us, he says, that what is that water of life? Guru Amar Das tells us that if you just come in contact, your soul comes in contact with the God pervading power, which is the cause of creation and controlling all creation, the God in action power, that is conscious, and your soul is conscious. So that if you come in contact with that, only then, that the water of life which will give you life. If you drink that water, then you will be accepted at the door of God. And you will be one with that. But this is such a water of life which is the panacea for all ills. For the go to say. But that is demands that can be had only at the feet of the mat. As Christ said, had she come to me, I would have given the water of life, by drinking which thirst would have been quenched forever. This is some water to be given by the masters. Again and again they refer to it. When you drink it, the same thing Guru Nanak says, that the water of life or the elixir of life which can give us an everlasting life, that is by drinking which you can have everlasting life. The same words I tell you in different languages, of course, given by the same. Again, you find in the Bible too, Christ said, I am the bread of life. This bread of life has come down from heaven. Whoever partakes of it has everlasting life. The same thing you find again in other scriptures. I am quoting these things to you only to show that you can have everlasting life only by coming in contact with God. By coming in contact, who has to come in contact with God? That is our own self. Or you. We are conscious entities. We are embodied souls. But our souls are under the control of mind. And mind is under the control of the outbound faculties. And we are identified with the outside things so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. So unless we liberate our souls from mind, and our new faculties and our attention, which is the expression of our soul, which is just engrossed, diffused into the outside things, unless that is withdrawn from there, and we come up the outgoing faculties or senses, we can come in contact with that water of life or the breath of life. So this is the food which if given to our souls, we can become spiritually other references you find in other masters' scriptures. You know, they tell us, if you rise above this body has got 9 doors, 9 apertures. If you shut the doors of the temple of the body, you will see the light of heaven. You go, you draw your attention from the 9 doors, 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, 2 ears, mouth, and other genital organs. You withdraw within, there's a 10th door also. That's the door which leads from the body to enter into the kingdom of God. That is called the 10th door, and that lies where? That lies at the seat of soul, at the back of the eyes, between the 2 eyebrows. If your soul is withdrawn, that commences in darkness, of course, but when that is opened, you enter, you are accessed into the kingdom of God. And here you get contact with light of God and the sound principle of God. So this is the bed of life. What is in there? He says there is light also, and there is very sweet music of the spheres going on. And that is the 2 water of life, are the 2 bread of life, by eating which your hunger is appeased for a while. By drinking the sweet symphony of which your thirst is quenched for a while. So this is the bread of life. This is the water of life. That is within us, but we cannot come in contact with it until we withdraw from outside and rise above body corruption. How to withdraw from outside and how to rise above body consciousness, this is a practical subject. All masters, they need somebody who is competent to help us to withdraw from outside and draw spirit currents from the body up to the seat of the soul in the body, or say rise above senses, or say learn to die so that you may begin to live. These are the words we find in the scriptures, but pity it is that we have only ruminated over them, never gone into the true import, what they really mean. And this true import can be given only by those who have an access to it, who have the same experience, or who are on the way. So what they tell us, intellectual people simply define it, what is the bed of life, well, it is intellect. What is the light? God is light, that is intellectual light. Well, that is substantial, something which can be experienced at the feet of the Master. So unless we come across the Master, we cannot have that experience, although that is already within us. That is why it is said, kingdom of God cannot be had by observation. So long as your attention is just diffused into the world through these outgoing faculties, well, you have no access to it. We must withdraw our attention from outside, enter this laboratory of the man body, and rise up to the level of the eyes, at the back of which the 2 seats of the soul is there. Then you find this bread of life and have the water of life. This is the gift of a master. And you'll find only coming to a master will not only do. Guru Nanak says, Om man, the water of life for which you have just come into the world and got a man body, that is the source of all happiness, all joy, all bliss. You can have that only at the feet of the Master. He says, you have joined various religions for that very purpose. In my evening talk, I was just laying before you what is meant by spirituality. Spirituality means knowing oneself, liberating it from the tentacles of mind and outward faculties, just withdraw from the body at the back of the eyes and have a look into the beyond, to come in contact with the God in expression power, which is God is light and God is something. So he says, remain in whatever religion you are, but unless you rise above the body consciousness, you cannot have that gift. Always is within you, and that also requires the help of some master to bring you up the body level, up to the come to the eye level. He says, remain in some religion, but as you see, outer social bodies of religions have to do with our physical bodies only. We bear badges of those different schools or colleges of religions we have joined. We read those scriptures, and also we say prayers, and further we perform certain rites and rituals. These all relate to the man body, physical body. To remain in physical body, doing all these things, you may be very regular, you may be saying prayers daily, you may be performing rites and rituals without any break day to day. You may be reading scriptures only. You may understand what is what, even to be able to sit at the feet of somebody who knows the way. Still, by reading alone or performing these things, don't boast of it until you rise above body consciousness and have this gift of water of life and the breath of life. And that can be had, remain in some religions. To remain in some religion is a blessing. If you don't remain, there will be corruption, or you will have to raise another religion. There are already so many religions. They have already multiplied in so many. Religions that have already stood the test of times, which remain there. But just rise above according to the teachings given by the masters who came from time to time in different religions. And they said the water of life is there and the bread of life is there. You will have it when you rise above the body consciousness. So they say, why the meaning in your own religion? You rise above body consciousness and the religions will only end with your physical body. When you rise above physical body, what you are? Your conscious entities, your conscious beings. You are a drops of the ocean of all consciousness. You are of the same essence, of the same religion as that of God. They say, remain there, but rise above, where you are already one. You are all children of God, brothers and sisters in God. So for that reason all Master tell us that this is the gift of Master. I just opened the Bible, you see, and so on the very page, what connection we should have with the Master. There it is, John chapter 15. understood that Christ said, if you love me, keep my commandments. That everybody knows. Keep our commandments means to live by the words what the Master says. But here is something where all scriptures have references to those things. We simply read them in Pasa. You say there, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. I am the true vine, and my Father is husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that it may bring forth, and every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it that it may bring forth more fruit. So it means, so long as the branches are embedded in the vines, they bear fruit. When they are cut out from the vines, they cannot bear fruit. He said, I am the true vine. How you can be embedded in the vines? By engrafting. You cut it out and put the branch of some other tree, even you put it in some other tree, and they become all two into one. You see? Similarly says, you abide in me. How can you abide in him? Whom you remember at heart, naturally the reaction takes place to whom you remember. They say, how you can abide in the Master, you see? So he goes on further to say, now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. He says, I have spoken a word to you which is the cleansing power, which can burn away all sins, all iniquities, all infirmities, which is the bread of life or the water of life. Abide in me and I in you. How clear was that? Abide in me and I in you. When you remember somebody, that will react in him. When that will react there, he will again react in you. So that becomes receptivity. Such a disciple becomes one with the mind. You are in him and he is in you. First you have to obey the commandments he gives, live up to them. And the second one is, you abide in him just as a branch is just abideth in the vines. As a branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me. You follow? Who can have that breath of life and the water of life? Who not only lives up to what he says, but he also abides in him. And how to have the sweet remembrance of the Master at heart? That sweet remembrance will react in the Master, and when he reacts there, you are remembered. And again, he remembers that reaction in you. Guru Arjan puts a question. If a disciple remembers his Master all the time, what does the Master do? Master is not a man. Man body is God. But in him is conscious. He sees, I and my Father are one. He has no more to remember anybody. But he is conscious that he is one. What does he do? He remembers his disciples. Those disciples who remember him, react in him. In this way you develop receptivity. And by receptivity what happens? You put the same question to the Master. He may be living at hundreds of miles away. And go to the disciple. put him the same question, and you will see they will speak the same words. That's due to their blood, you see. They become the mouthpiece. Disciple becomes the mouthpiece of the master. The master speaking to him. This is how you have got the bread of life, and what is he? Christ, I am the bread of life, and all masters say, we are the bread of life. And what was that bread of life that had been defined? World was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. World was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. What is world? You find in St. John's Gospel, in the beginning was the world. Word was with God, and Word was God. And the whole creation came into being after the Word. So what is Word? It is God is wordless, nameless, absolute. When it came into being, into expression, into action, that God into action power, or the God into expression power is called Word. So that God in action power manifested at some human pole, that is called the Word.
Good morning, and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was readings from St. John, recorded December 13, 1963, at Harmony Grove, California. Our reader this morning is Joanna Swanson. Good morning, Joanna.
Good morning, Leslie, and good morning to all my very dear brothers and sisters, and a special good morning to our sister, Leslie McIntosh, who is hosting the satsang for the very first time. Today, I would like to read from a talk published in the April 1972 issue of Satsandesh called The Inn of Madness. Man spends his whole life exploring the so-called wonders of the world in outer things and places, but few ever dream of exploring the inner depths of this wonderful house in which we live, the physical form. Throughout history, few have solved the mystifying riddle of life. When regarding the body, what do we see? Do we see but a 5 to 6 foot statue of matter? Do we not realize that some power sustains this human form and is, in fact, imprisoned within it? Even though the body has 9 outlets, yet the prisoner within cannot get out through any of them. Why? Because it is being controlled. Breathing goes on incessantly, and when the breath goes out, it does not stay out. Some power is drawing it back into the body. Sometimes a man is shot, perhaps 10 or 20 times, yet he does not die. On the other hand, he might slip when walking and break his neck. What a grand enigma. We have no knowledge of this power within. We never give a thought to it or to that source from which it draws life and sustenance. Masters have said that those people who do not believe in God, even though they may always be near the holy places, are atheists. However, those who do not know who they truly are, realistically speaking, are more atheistic. Excuse me, but where God is concerned, are we not all atheists? For no one has seen him. A small child is more conscious of his true self than an adult. But as he grows, he becomes more and more aware of the body. When you ask him who he is, he will open his eyes and mouth wide in an endeavor to express what he truly is, but when fully grown, he will tell you, I am Ram Dass, or I am Ram Singh, for he cannot differentiate between his body and his real self. When you say, this is my body, have you ever taken it off as you remove your coat or shoes? We say, this is my body, but in fact, we have become the body. We do not know who I is or who it is that says this is mine. So it is a more damaging ignorance not to know one's true self, that self which must eventually experience the over-self. The self or soul is the conscious entity which enlivens the body and which depends upon something even greater for its existence. As long as it is not conscious of its true nature, it cannot experience that greater nature. So in the true sense, there are very few theists in the world. For a theist is one who has realized himself and has realized the Lord also. Intellectually, the whole world can say, I am not the mind, I am not the senses, I am not the intellect, I am not the pranyas, and so on. But has anyone ever separated himself from these things? We can take off our coat and hat, but can we step out of the body and see who the indweller is? Self-realized people say that the greatest book of knowledge is the physical form through which all written scriptures have come. The explorers of the body, the rishis, munis, and mahatmas, realized the truth of the mystery and found the power that controls the human being, and that is one's true self. That, in turn, is sustained by the over-self. Scriptures came through such men who were in tune from within, who, by analyzing themselves and rising above body consciousness, got into higher touch and became the mouthpiece of the greater power. Whatever they said came direct from that power. They did not speak at the level of mind or senses, and this is the big difference between words that come from a realized person and words that come from the intellect. For the intellectual can speak only from that level, whereas the realized soul speaks as inspired from above. Emerson said, those thoughts which come without thinking are always perfect. A Muslim fakir says, actually, you are the mother of all books. And he also says, when your outer self finds your real self, then you will see that something is within you and that God is speaking within you. Guru Nanak says, whatever comes from the beloved, I give out. He does not speak from his own thoughts. Christ said, I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me. He gave me a commandment what I should say and what I should speak. Excuse me. When Philip asked to be shown the Father, Christ reminded him, have I been so long with you, and yet thou hast not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. I am in the Father, and the Father in me. The words I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. For example, if one listens to a radio that is tuned in, one hears the sound. From what place does the radio catch the sound? From whatever station it is attuned to. A God-realized person is in tune with the Lord, and in him the Lord speaks. Brahms speaks through the physical form. If there were no physical form, how would Brahms speak? That divine link is in each human being, not more in one and less in another, but the same in all. However, only those who have come into realization and are the mouthpiece of God can see that I and my Father are one. This is because they rose above the mind, the senses, and the net of illusion and saw that the sustainer of all life is the one Lord. During the life of the Rishi Bhardwaj, a householder by the name of Shonak went to him one day and said, "Maharaj, what is that thing knowing which all else is known?" The Rishi looked at him and saw that he was a householder. Now, you should understand that householders are very different today. In those days, a man would become a householder after 25 years of brahmacharya, chastity in thought, word, and deed, during which time he gained extensive knowledge of the Vedas and Shastras, the ancient Hindu scriptures. After 25 years of leading a householder's life, according to the teachings of the Shastras, he would enter Vanprastha Ashram, the secluded life, devoted solely to the realization of the Lord, cut off from worldly life and worldly people. You might say that in this day and age, the latter phase has become more like a business. A man reads one or two books and then starts giving lectures, but pays little attention to the inner self. If a man's eye is not open, what can he say on the subject? Kabir Sahib once had a conversation with a learned pundit and eventually remarked to him, "Oh, brother, your mind and my mind can never agree. I say what I see, and you say what has been written." It is entirely different to speak from experience. One can never be fully convinced by reading someone else's statement, for seeing is believing. God gave equal privileges to all human beings, and the only difference between a master soul and an ordinary man is that one is in tune and the other is not. The embodied soul has got consciousness, for while living in this physical form, yet it is of the same essence as God, who is all consciousness. He is the ocean, we are the drops. But unfortunately, we are under the influence of the mind. The mind, in turn, is being dragged by the senses, and the senses are dragged by worldly enjoyments. In this way, the jiva, the embodied soul, the soul in creation, has become the image of the body and the world. Identified so much so with these, it has forgotten its true identity. For he who has forgotten his own self, the matter of knowing the Lord is very far away. For this reason, nearly all masters have advised, "Man, know thyself." Nanak says, "Without knowing oneself, this illusion will not go." And when does one see what the soul is? When the senses are stilled, the mind is stilled, and the intellect at rest, then only will one know the soul. It is for the soul to experience the Lord. He cannot be known by senses, mind, intellect, or pranayas. It is very clear cut. Knowledge is like a child of all books, and love is the mother of all books. For God is love, and the soul, being of the same essence as the Lord, is also love. But what do we do with this love? At the sense level, we scatter it in hundreds and thousands of places. One heart and millions of desires. On top of that, more desires. Then where is the place for him to sit? If one withdraws from everything else and concentrates in one place, great power will spring forth. If a pipe has 10 holes and you close up 9 of them, the water will simply gush out of the 10th. Up to now, our soul has been under the mind's control, but by withdrawing from the outer influences and receiving strength, it can gain control of the whole being. Remember that God is all attention, and the soul, having the same nature, is also all attention in miniature. When that all attention wished to become from one to many, the whole of creation came into being. The soul also has great power, but under the mind's influence, it has scattered its attention hither and thither, thereby weakening itself. If only it would withdraw from the outer attractions, it could create a town, at least. It is with much sorrow that I say the soul's strength has been divided into so many avenues. Give me one moment. So, all true masters say that realizing God is a simple matter. What is there to realizing the Lord? Just uproot the attention from here and plant it there. It is simply a matter of withdrawing and gathering together the scattered attention. As you know, the rays of the sun under normal conditions will not ignite anything. But if you pass them through a convex lens and thereby concentrate them, anything they settle upon will burst into flame. The whole of this life's purpose is to become still, to withdraw from outer environments and to concentrate. You have great strength in you. You are the child of a lion. So, when Bhadwaj Rishi answered the householder Shonak's question, he sought to reply in such a way as to be of help to Shonak in his household duties. Knowing he was a literate man, the Rishi said, there are two kinds of teachings. One is called Aparavidya and the other Paravidya. Aparavidya comes from books, scriptures, and so forth, and creates some interest in the seeker, which leads to some devotion too. For this, customs, rites, pilgrimages, saying prayers, singing hymns, giving alms, fasting, performing austerities, and so forth, will help to create the bhakti, the devotion to God. However, this is all preparation of the ground. And there is no real satisfaction in it because it will not give salvation or realization. All these things come under the category of good actions, and one may gain a heavenly place through them. But again and again, the soul will have to return to earth, for they are all at the level of the senses. These are the first steps to be taken toward the Lord. Just as a child goes to school and first learns how to use a pencil. But you can see just how much value these actions hold. You all have taken these steps at some time or other, but now go ahead. Make the best use of the foundation you have built. The foundation alone cannot take you to the ultimate goal without your knowing the self. Brothers, withdraw. Become conscious of yourself. Get the contact with the over-self. As Bhardwaj Rishi told Shonak the householder, when you know yourself, you will know everything. Now you can see that this teaching is for all true seekers of God. God made man, but he did not stick any label on him. The purpose of all religions is to realize God and to spend this life journey in peace, contentment, and usefulness to each other. These were the true aims, but what was the outcome? He started to realize God, but in between the mind turned turtle. You may ask, have we lost ourselves? Yes, most decidedly, yes. One Muslim fakir says that the atrocities man has committed against himself could not have been done by even the blindest of all. And the biggest atrocity? Living in this house, we lost contact with the one who runs it. The mystery of life must be solved no matter to which religion a person belongs. The masters who solved this mystery were born into various religions, just as were those who contacted them and who, in turn, were taught the solution. Rava Das was a cobbler. Kabir Sahib was a weaver. Tulsi Sahib was a Brahmin. Man made castes. God made the soul and embodied it within the human form. First, rise above the senses, and then tell what you are and what is your religion. No matter which master's hymns you take, the subject will remain the same, even though language and expression may vary. Masters do not consider men from their religious labels, but rather they see everyone as soul in the body, and regard all from the level of soul. They are not gurus of any particular religion, but are gurus of mankind. Satguru is one who brings all peoples together. For the Satguru, there is no conflict of caste or creed, no thought of breaking old traditions or making new ones. In fact, they do say that there are already more than sufficient religions and sects in existence. Our Hazur would remark that there's no point in digging new wells when there are already more than enough to serve the people. Man must either live up to his religion or make a new one. Is it not better then to remain in your present formation? But while living according to its aims and precepts, seek for one who has already solved the mystery of life and who can help you to fulfill the same. You may find such a personality in any religion, and you may call him by any name you wish. To become proficient in any certain subject, one must go to an expert in that study. If a person has a sincere desire to learn about the soul, he or she should approach a competent teacher of spirituality, one who has realized himself in the over-self. This is a matter of common sense and needs no philosophy. All great teachers of this subject say that we are all embodied souls, living in the house of the physical form from which we can derive the greatest benefit if we but make the best use of the situation. The human form is the king of all species and is the highest rung in the ladder of creation, for in this form, God has placed the power of differentiation through which one can define truth from untruth and so achieve that which can be done in no other form. There is a prayer in the Ved Bhagwan which says, O Lord, take us from the untruth to the truth. But of course, if a man has no interest in either, what is the use? Swamiji Maharaj said, Hansi, a mythical swan-like bird, separates the milk from the water. You are Hansi, O soul. Hansi is said to have the ability in her beak to separate milk from water and drinks only the milk. O soul, you are like that Hansi, and you can differentiate the truth from the untruth. Drink only milk and leave the water. Think of this body as matter. God resides therein, and only He is the truth. The body and all things connected are in constant flux, for it is the nature of matter to be ever changing. Only the soul is true, permanent, and unchanging. Try to recognize the soul. Atheist or devotee, Manmukh or Gurumukh, what is the difference between them? To know the atheist, he's lost in the world. To know the devotee, the world is lost in him. The Manmukh is lost. Lost in the world of mind and senses. For the true devotee, the world does not really exist. For he has the Lord's intoxication and is awakened to the truth within himself and has thereby forgotten both the world and the afterworld. Great is man. Do not think of him as merely a form, just a 5 or 6 foot puppet. If the gods and goddesses desire to gain salvation, they also must inherit this human form. The Upanishads say, soul is riding in the chariot of the body, intellect is the charioteer, mind is the reins, senses are the horses, dragging it into the field of enjoyment. So, it means that the sole barrier between us and the Lord is the mind. If we could only cast aside the mind and the senses, we would realize our true selves and the Lord. If this aim, which has been founded in all religions, is not achieved, a man's life is wasted. When Zoroaster was asked for advice, he said, "Join the army of God." When he was asked what qualifications a person required to join this army, he replied, good thoughts, good words, good deeds. This means live a righteous life in every way, and this has been advised by all masters of all dharmas which is supreme. Take the name of God and live righteously. In the Sikh religion, it is said, repeat the Naam and share your food with others. The teachings are all the same, and we want to enter the army of God, but we enter only the army of religion. And the result of this is that men are fighting among themselves. We put God aside and start saying, I am a Sikh, or I am a Muslim, and so on. Kabir Sahib says, no one is Hindu or Muslim. Think of us as one. God made the human being, and man is older than all philosophies and religions, which were formed long after man's advent, for the noble purpose of realizing the soul. If this aim is not achieved, where then is the purpose? I can only say that if the leaders of the religions were to give the correct teaching, the world would be enjoying peace. Is it not the aim of all religions to pass one's sojourn of worldly life in peace, to be of helpful use to each other, to realize God? Surely this is the true aim of all. And if all are devotees of the one God, why all the conflict and strife? Hundreds of lovers, but one beloved for all. Customs and religions may be separate, but the aim is the same. But as things stand, brother is fighting brother, and both declare their own sect is better. Is it not clear that all are the same? Do not say that the books are all lies. Liar is he who does not absorb. The Holy Scriptures record the words of realized people who have walked the path of spirituality. However many steps they took along this path, so accordingly they taught others. We have respect for all. Just consider how the masters regard life. They are not bound by any special affiliation, and they are not dictated to by any politics. They are cosmic beings. Peace be unto all the world under thy will, O Lord. Guru Nanak also said, O Nanak, the Nam is ever ascending. Through thy will the whole world benefits. The hearts of the masters are so abounding, everyone can have a place therein. When they come for the upliftment of all people. All sects are theirs, all religions, all countries. When I was visiting the West, one place held a meeting for East and West, and I was invited to represent the East. To represent the West, they invited a certain Frenchman. But at the last minute, he could not attend the meeting, so the organizers said to me, "Well, we will leave both East and West to you." I replied, "There is no doubt that the saying is, East is East and West is West, and never the twain shall meet. But some man has said that, not God. The whole creation is the house of the Lord, and there is no East or West in it. All these countries are but so many rooms in the one house of our Father." Airplanes have eliminated the vast differences between countries. Today one may be in India and tomorrow in England and the day after in America. But man is a man no matter where he is and regardless of outer garb or custom. All are devotees of the one Lord. When I was asked in America if I had come to found some ashram, I told them I had come to uplift the very ashrams that people carry around with them, the physical forms. People have forgotten these things. I have come to awaken them. There is no need for introduction of anything new, for the thing already exists within. But I have come to revive what you have forgotten. Masters regard situations with a very open outlook. But those whose outlook is confined to their own closed sect do not give the true teachings. Well, it looks as if our time for today is up. Only half of this talk of masters has been read. I will read the second half the next time I read. And in closing, I simply want to say thank you, Master, for bringing all your children together. We ask that you give us all your blessing, your guidance, your protection, and help us to walk your path of true devotion and to love one another. Amen.
Thank you, Joanna. Thank you for reading for us today. Would you tell us again what you were reading this morning?
Yes, this is a talk given by Master in the April 1972 issue of Sat Sandesh called In of Madness.
Thank you. We had 79 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.